welcome to another KBOO Public Affairs special program. Today we focus again on the crisis in the Middle East, the ongoing Israeli assault in Lebanon, and the continuing aggression in Gaza. We are very fortunate to have with us on telephone line today the founding member of National Council of Arab Americans, the vice chair of its National Board for Public Affairs, Dr. Manzer Sleiman. Welcome, Dr. Sleiman.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Sleiman is an independent political military analyst with expertise in U.S. national security affairs. He's also an independent media consultant with over 25 years of experience in Middle East diplomacy and media relations. Dr. Sleiman, you have just returned from Beirut, from a visit to the Middle East. The news from the Middle East becomes more frightening with each passing day. Over 428 Lebanese civilians have been killed, thousands wounded. Ambulances have been attacked. A UN position was rocketed the other day, killing four UN observers. Recent reports indicate a very large number of Israeli soldiers were killed in a Hezbollah ambush. Over 30 Israelis killed in northern Israel by Hezbollah missile attacks. The list of frightening news from this region just goes on and on. Having just returned from that region of the world, could you share with us your immediate thoughts from that visit and your concerns for the broader crisis?
Well, first, on a personal note, I was visiting my parents, and it's unfortunate that I had the unfortunate situation of having a personal loss, that my dad passed away last Wednesday from a heart attack. We live in the Bekaa Valley. I was traveling between Beirut, where my brother lives, and my parents lives in the Bekaa, and trying to avoid shelling for bridges every time they find that the people are taking a detour away from the bridges that they destroyed, they will find them. But in any case, my dad was not hit by any missile, but I think the stress of the situation contribute to it, especially when three missiles hit a truck, a refrigerator truck, that was parked about 5,000 yards. That truck was used for milk and cheese and vegetable for a vendor that this is his livelihood. So as a result of the entire situation, my dad had mild heart attack, and then finally he got a serious one that passed away. Now, this personal loss is nothing compared to the loss of the people of Lebanon in general and the entire region for this vicious war. And let me just tell your listener that, frankly, the main aim for this war is not really to free the two captured soldiers. It's not even to remove Hezbollah. Because if you see the kind of destruction, you would conclude it's purely and simply to bring Lebanon down on its knees. It's to bring about its disintegration, if possible. And it seems to me that this is one of the conditions of the so-called rebirth or reshaping of a new Middle East that our Secretary of State is talking about. I may add that the attacks were vicious, systematic. They are dismembering Lebanon completely. Most of the road network has been bombed, making it difficult to move from any region to another. And like I told you, I had the fortunate to, it's fortunate for me to stay alive, but I don't want to make myself a hero here. But at least 3, 4, 5 maybe occasion that we passed from a bridge where either they hit that bridge before or they hit after we pass when we are moving, whether between Beirut and the Bekaa or between the Bekaa and Damascus, and people trying to find other way to move around. So wherever there is a bridge, it has been destroyed.
Dr. Sleiman, first of all, I want to convey our condolences for the loss of your father, and I would be interested in your thoughts about, given the impact on the infrastructure of Lebanon, if very likely, in addition to the stress, The stress also on the healthcare system. If very likely your father had been able to get the care during not a crisis like this, not when the healthcare system is under such a strain because of the mounting casualties of this attack, if that might have been a factor.
Well, it is a factor, but frankly, the option to take him to the hospital was not even contemplated by my brother, who was with him at the time, and I was away about hour and a half drive, because they were, they said, you know, we could be hit, because the airplane circulating all over, and they were hitting a different area, and so it's not safe even to move. This is for the people who are capable and able. They have gasoline, they have cars, they have means of transportation to move, but there's thousands and thousands of people who are injured and they cannot be taken to the hospital. And I just want to tell you that even last week's statistics were that in Beirut alone, the hospitals that had the injured, 55% of them, they were children. And the number could go higher and higher. Of course, in other area where, especially what we are witnessing in particular, the destruction of what you could call it the demographic and geographic base of what they perceived to be Hezbollah, which is mean the south, the Bekaa, the suburb of Beirut. And they thought, when they designed this war, that they could turn the Shiite population against Hezbollah and turn the rest, who they were after the assassination of Hariri in Beirut, they were also trying to move Lebanon into the direction of the Pax Americana project in the region, the things that Condoleezza Rice is talking about, the new Middle East that's been built from burning the Middle East, from destruction all over. So if I may just give you a little bit of information about what has been destroyed, just a little bit of.
Certainly.
So they all the ports have been shelled in Lebanon. All the radar stations have been put out of function. Power plants, most of them, by the way, because they left some standing, and for insidious purpose, that they will allow the population that is not directly considered to be the base of Hezbollah to live in a little bit a better situation, but to pressure at the same time Hezbollah to accept the diktat that they were trying to put on them. You have TV and cell phone relays being bombed. You have gas stations, gas reservoirs, trucks and containers like the one that I mentioned that close by. And every truck, by the way, is a target in Lebanon now, whether small size or larger size. You have also the unbelievable thing that the small industries in Lebanon, most of it went up in the flame now. Paper factories, plastic factories, furniture factories, marble, ceramics factories. And one particular one, it's a milk factory. It's called Liban Lait, Libanlait, which is in French, lait, like milk. It's a dairy factory. It was just completed maybe a few years ago and cost about maybe $40 million. And it was supplied with milk from all the farmers in the Bekaa Valley. It is now a ruined one. And I don't know what is the connection between the dairy factory and Hezbollah missiles. It's just unbelievable. This is just giving you, in addition to the displaced people, like close to a million as we go, I mean, from 700,000 to a million people, which is about maybe quarter of the population of Lebanon, being displaced. And one of the irony, but it's really reflective of the solidarity among the people in the region, the Palestinian and the Lebanese, that some of the refugees from the south, they were welcomed in the refugee camps of the Palestinians. And imagine what went through the minds of those people that were so desperate from the villages in the south that they were just moving, and they got closer to where they could go to, and they what went through their mind, how the Palestinians who are living really a miserable life in Lebanon will be able to receive them. And they receive them and welcome them, and they present them with shelter and food, and it was really a joyful moment, a moment of solidarity in the middle of the rubble and destruction and death that the Israeli killing machine is doing, turning Lebanon and Palestine, Gaza, to a killing field, and United States encouraging that. So in the eyes of the people now, the war is not an Israeli war, it's a U.S.-Israeli war of destruction and disintegration of the societies there.
So we are speaking with, we're very fortunate to have with us today, Dr. Mansour Sulaiman, who in addition to being a founding member of the National Council of Arab Americans, is also the Washington Bureau Chief of Al-Mustaqbal Al-Arabi, which is a publication by the Center for Arab Unity Studies in Beirut. Dr. Sulaiman, I wonder if you could speculate, if you could provide an alternative explanation. As you've pointed out, it seems at least doubtful that the ostensible reasons for this attack on Lebanon, for this assault on Lebanon, this ongoing destruction of the Lebanese civilian infrastructure and the killing of hundreds of civilians, the attacks on the UN and ambulances, this scale of the attack is explained by the capture of two Israeli soldiers and the attack on the Israeli military outpost at the southern border. What do you think is behind this current escalation of violence in the Middle East? And of course, what are the intentions of the United States government in backing it so in such an uncompromising fashion?
Well, I hope in the next month or two, some of the news will be reported to uncover the many meetings they were held, probably in Washington, in Israel, between Americans and Israelis to plot for the things that is occurring right now. I don't want to give more details about this because I am also a journalist and I need to report accurate information, factual information. But I would just, I'm coming across some information that it will be disclosed by a respected journalist, an investigative journalist, about that. This is just to give you flavor that to wait and see some of the facts that are going to be uncovered. But we don't need even to look into that. My reading of the situation is the following. After the invasion of Iraq since 2003, we are witnessing a deterioration in the so-called war on terrorism, or the long war as been labeled by the Pentagon, the war that unlimited in geographic space and time. The plan for the United States to dominate the region is faltering, and there is a reservoir of military power by Israel that has not been used fully in the last two major conflicts. I'm talking about 1991, the war on Iraq that was labeled the liberation of Kuwait, and the so-called liberation of Iraq in 2003. There was a movement of resistance from Tehran to Damascus to Gaza to Beirut and others in the Arab world. In the Islamic world, they're resisting this design of remapping the Middle East and the Arab world and Islamic world in the shape and the form that United States want and Israel wants. So I think they realize that they cannot crack Syria and Iran directly because they are hard shell to be cracked, let's put it this way. So they think that by hitting the Palestinian resistance and Lebanese resistance and turning Palestine and Lebanon to the camp of the potential plan for Pax Americana in the region, that will encircle the other power of resistance to this plan, mainly in Syria and Tehran. So it's a kind of giving a green light, but at the same time feeling that the heat from the failure in Iraq, the enterprise in Iraq, in Afghanistan, even in Somalia. Somalia, if we count Taliban in Afghanistan to be number one, maybe we got below number one or whatever. I mean, you could call in priorities of who is more radical in their outlook about being the model of Taliban. So this war of terror and on terrorism and trying to get rid of tyranny, as President Bush in his second inauguration, we can see that it's not working. So the diversion from one hand and at the same time, diversion from the trouble in Iraq, but at the same time, you can win in Iraq if you could really change the balance of power in the region as a whole and shift it in the direction of completely domination of United States and the Israeli. And the Israeli, they were eager to portray anything they will do as part of the so-called war on terror. That's why they're labeling Hezbollah as a terrorist and Hamas as a terrorist. And believe me, now, how can this Hezbollah and others, or Hamas, let's say, be labeled as a terrorist, you know, easily when they, let's talk about Lebanon, 30-40% of the population is the natural base of Hezbollah, has block in the parliament about 24 members, has 3 to 4 members in the cabinet. How can you say it's not a legitimate political party, part of an integral part of the society, whether you like their tactic, whether you like their politics or not? And latest statistic, by the way, were announced yesterday on one of the radio Democracy Now radio network.
Yeah, cable listeners heard that. Yes.
Yeah, a professor, well-respected professor, who teach at the American University in Beirut, who wrote a book about Hezbollah, and she's a really expert in Hezbollah, and I can probably before the end of the this program maybe give you her name. She conducted a survey with all religious factions in Lebanon. We have about 17 of them, but at least the major one, and she discovered that the highest majority, even maybe about 80% or plus, or around 80% from all sects, whether Druze, Maronite, Christian, we're talking about Christian, Sunni, and Shia, of course, they support Hezbollah. And they think that it's a resistance movement. It's a grassroots resistance movement, despite any label that they can be put on it.
I want to return to that question of what appears to be actually a shift in precisely the opposite direction of what the Israeli government may have intended, that is, a shift towards much more support for Hezbollah than had been present before. But I also want to talk about the response here in the United States from the Islamic and Arab American communities. And also, I need to mention locally, we do have a gathering this coming Sunday. This is a gathering at Pioneer Courthouse Square at 1 p.m. That's July 30th, this Sunday. And it is a call for an immediate ceasefire and for humanitarian aid to the victims of the violence in Lebanon and Gaza. And again, that's at 1 p.m. Sunday at Pioneer Courthouse Square. That's being pulled together by a number of local organizations, including the Palestine Arab American Association, the Islamic Center of Portland, Americans United for Palestinian Human Rights. And I should provide some full disclosure here that I also work with one of the organizations involved, the Portland Peaceful Response Coalition. Dr. Slaman, in terms of the response here in the United States, typically when there is an explosion, an escalation of violence in the region, you do see organizations like AIPAC and other organizations that lobby on behalf of the Israeli government spinning up into high gear to support the aggression by Israel in this case, providing justifications for it in terms of the right of self-defense and so on. But one of the things that the New York Times has reported today is that we're seeing a growing response from other communities, from the Arab American and Islamic communities, calling for a more balanced foreign policy on the part of the United States. Do you see an increase in the activity from these communities to provide a counterbalance to...
That's true. There is a movement in that direction. But frankly, let's be honest about it. most of the prominent Arab American organization and Islamic organization, they were under so much distress and fear from the aftermath of 9/11, September 11, when every Arab and Muslim is being accused to be a terrorist or potential terrorist, even thinking of being terrorist and being treated as such. So there was in the community two direction: the direction that to appease the administration, to try to cooperate fully, even at the expense of civil liberties and civil rights for the Arabs and Muslims and others. And there was some other direction with people who thinks that attacking civil rights for Arab and Muslim, whether for 9/11 or not, although it is needed to be reminded the people who are accusing Arab and Muslims that none of the Arab American or Muslim American participated in that heinous crime. But despite that, there is a growing movement, and National Council of Arab Americans is one of the reasons that we establishing this independent course, or because the other community and the other organization are not responding really to the aspiration of our community. But under this situation, I'm not saying that I don't distinguish between any other organization, although, like I said, we need to be clear that attacking Arab and American civil liberties and civil rights, it's as the same as attacking every American. And we have a stake as Arab Americans with other communities, whether Latin American, Latino Americans, African American, Asian Americans, Japanese, etc. We have a stake in maintaining a way of life in the United States that is not a police state. It's not a national security state that based on military intervention and domination outside, and a police state inside that taking away our civil liberties and our constitutional rights. So we need to build that larger coalition among all the people that they are suffering from this adventurous course of military intervention and police state inside in the United States. This dangerous course must stop because it's taken away from the priorities of this country. And we could see in Katrina and others how these misplaced priorities were evident, and we could not help the people, our people. We have millions and millions of people in poverty. We have millions and millions without health insurance, etc. So instead of spending all this money on the war machine for dominating the world, we need to turn around. And Arab and Muslim, like any others, they have a stake in improving the life, in the daily life of every American here. So I think I just want to end by saying one thing, that in our activities, there is a major demonstration going. We're calling for on the August 12th to surround the White House and trying to express again the will of the American people that this madness must stop. The destruction and the death of people must stop, and the war machine of whether the Israeli criminal or the American war machine must stop, instead of sending cluster bombs and sending smart bombs. We need to support the people for self-determination and to help them to fight poverty, disease, and environmental degradation instead of waging this destructive war.
And unfortunately, we're at the end of our time. I want to thank Dr. Mansour Sulaiman for joining us today. Hopefully we'll have you back soon. There's so much more to be said about the current crisis. I also want to mention that by way of information, that there is legislation called House Concurrent Resolution 450 that was introduced by Dennis Kucinich, calling for an immediate ceasefire and calling for multi-party negotiations. I believe Congressman Peter DeFazio was a co-signer. I'm not certain of the status of other Oregon representatives. So, and also there are opportunities for humanitarian aid that people can become involved in. Dr. Sulaiman, thank you for joining us today.
You're more than welcome. And the lady, the professor, her name, as I promised, Amal Saad Ghurayib.
And listeners can get to listen to that report by going to the Democracy Now! Website.
Yes.
And playing that streaming audio there. Or,
yeah,
or
if I may say one thing for 10 seconds, do you have them for me?
We have barely 10 seconds. Quickly, yes, please. Thank you.
The disregard for the people is not only limited to Muslim or Arabs or et cetera. American citizens, they were left out without help by this administration, 25,000 of them in Lebanon.
And the website is for the National Council of Arab Americans is arab-american.net. It's an excellent website. There's quite a phenomenal map there that maps the Israeli assault on Lebanon, the map of locations bombed. It's a very dramatic illustration. We are out of time. I want to thank our guest again, Dr. Manzer Sleiman of the National Council of Arab Americans. I also want to thank our engineer, Jake. And thank you, Jake, for engineering this program, and Kathleen Stevenson for scheduling this special interview program today. You are listening, of course, to KBOO Community Radio. Coming up at 11 a.m. is today's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. Please support Community Radio. We're at 90.7 FM in Portland, 100.7 FM in Corvallis, 91.9 FM in the Columbia Gorge. I've been your host, William Seaman. Thank you for tuning in, and thanks for supporting KBOO Public Affairs Programming.
There will be a live remote from On Daz at the Fez Ballroom, Saturday, July 29th.
With Anjali and the Incredible Kid on KBOO 90.7 FM. We'll be celebrating 4 years of throwing Desi parties in Portland, presenting the best UK Bhangra, Asian hip-hop, R&B, and Bollywood.
If you're 21 or over, you can come and join the party at 316 Southwest 11th Avenue.